Good afternoon. Muy buenas tardes. This is Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, www.coopradio.org, live on the Internet. This is the Monday Brown Bagger, and I'm Alfred Weber. And today we have a very special guest, lawyer, writer and environmental scholar Andrew D. Bashago, whose discovery, which we'll describe in a moment, of life on Mars has been featured in this week's Modern Physics review. Andrew Bashago was, who's 47, was one of the whiz kids who served from 1969 to 1972 in DARPA's secret time-space exploration project Pegasus. This was as a young child. A past member of Mensa, he holds 5 degrees, including a BA in history from UCLA and a Master of Philosophy from the University of Cambridge. While at UCLA, Andy became a journalist and a protege of editor Norman Cousins of the Saturday Review, who once compared him to Robert Hutchins and nominated him to be the editor of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. He was inspired by a meeting with Futurist Buckminster Fuller in 1981 to pursue a career in environmental policy. And after their meeting, Bucky Fuller wrote, incidentally, I've interacted with Bucky, and I can see how he would have said this, that Andy Bashago's integrity augurs well for humanity's continuance in the universe. Mr. Bashago has contributed to Los Angeles newspapers, national periodicals, and the Cousteau Society's journal Calypso Logs. He's also edited Alfred Weber's book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, as well as the Fatima Trilogy, a definitive history of the Fatima incident of 1917 that explores extraterrestrial aspects. And in 2008, he founded MARS, the Mars Anomaly Research Society, in 2008, after discovering evidence of life in a photograph of Mars beamed back to Earth by NASA's exploration rover Spirit. Well, after that introduction, Andy, welcome to Co-op Radio.
Thank you for having me on, Alfred. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
You know, the photograph that we're talking about is NASA's photograph, PIA-10214. And for those listeners who may have Internet access, we've made it available online at exopolitics.com, www.exopolitics.com, as well as a number of documents of your discovery. And that photograph is a panoramic, you've written, quote, is a panoramic montage of a series of snapshots of the Martian surface that were taken by NASA's Mars exploration rover Spirit in 2007 when Spirit was perched on the western edge of the Home Plate Plateau in the inner basin of the Columbia Hills range of the Gusev Crater on Mars. Now, I wondered if you, as a discoverer, could just unroll for us how it was that you took this photograph that had been online for a bit over a year and really went into it in a way that others had not.
Well, as you said, NASA photograph PIA-10214 has been on the Internet for a year, or had been on the Internet for a year when I began to evaluate what was in it. It was posted by NASA on the World Wide Web in January of 2008. And at that time, there was much public speculation and some limited scientific scrutiny of the fact that over on the far left edge of the plateau, there was a small object jutting from the edge of the plateau that resembled a female human form. It was conjectured at the time that this might be a life form or a statue or other anomalous object. But this object, which I'm calling the being on the edge, just to give it a name that we can all refer to, was quickly dismissed as a natural rock formation, as essentially a natural burl or spar emanating from that part of the plateau. When I originally saw that image, however, in early 2008, I was struck by a number of elements of that object, which would be consistent not with it being a life form, but with it being a statue. For one thing, it possessed articulated human form. And even here on Earth, natural rock formations that we see human forms in are usually much less discreetly articulated as this object was. Second, the object possessed what looked to be like clothing, which would be something that would be found in a statue. In addition to that fact, I noticed very early on that when versions of this image were being posted on the World Wide Web, observers and others, you know, dealing with the image were ignoring the fact that to the right side of the apparent figure of a female form was the figure of a male form that apparently had broken off from the female form and slid down the right side of the edge of the cliff there, and can be seen lying prone face down on the right side of the other form. And I realized that that indicated that if this was a natural rock formation, somehow nature had accidentally produced two human forms in close proximity to each other on the surface of Mars, and that in addition to that, these two natural formations also possess differentiation based on gender. The other thing I noticed is, I've referenced it, is the fact that both of these forms seem to possess clothing, which to my knowledge has never naturally resulted in a natural rock formation on Earth. As I began to scrutinize the image more carefully during 2008, periodically I would visit it because I considered it a very, very fascinating anomaly. I detected that there was, in fact, additional evidence that archaeology and art history would consider probative of the notion that it, in fact, was a statue rather than natural rock formation. For one thing, if you examine the image very closely, you can see that it's not a spar jutting out in a continuous way from the edge of the plateau, but it is, in fact, attached to a pediment. Now, statues have pediments. In archaeology, if an object is attached to an intentional base, that's probative of the conclusion that it's an intentionally carved statue. And as I began to scrutinize it further during 2008, by December I made a startling discovery, and that is the fact that not only are there two human forms there in close proximity, which would be astronomically highly improbable for nature to have carved naturally, but in fact, there is a painted carved statue at the base of the female human form that is there. It's in the nature of a rock carving of a plumed serpent. You can see it on the right bottom of the female form. As long as you step back a notch and you widen the parameters of the image to see that there is a base and there is a pediment with a rock carving on it. This rock carving was painted, and the paint has largely faded, but the reds and blues of the paint can still be detected in the photograph. And the carving consists of a plumed serpent that is biting the neck of a rather large image of a bearded male human standing to the left side of the pediment of the statue. So by December of 2008, I realized that we were dealing with something unprecedented, namely an archaeological artifact on the surface of the red planet. And I knew, having stayed abreast of the controversy regarding Cydonia that Richard Hoagland and other pioneers in Mars anomaly research have done such great work in regard to, that this finding was as significant in the sense that it couldn't be attributed to just being a trick of light and shadow on Mars. In other words, it was much less amenable to different theories of interpretation. It is, in fact, much more clearly and demonstrably a statue, and that means that Mars, I knew at that point that Mars either was inhabited or at some time it had been visited or inhabited by beings who were aware of human anatomy, such as it appears on Earth, and were capable of rendering it in stone. And I realized that, in fact, established that at one time, at least, there was humanoid life on Mars. So realizing that, as a matter of first impression, that there was a statue on Mars, in December 2008, as I was taking my Christmas holiday and enjoying a welcome respite from my busy solo law practice in Washington State, I began to spend more time essentially studying different parts of the photograph. The photograph is very large. In fact, it's a very dense photograph that encompasses a very large area. For example, if you print the photograph from the format that it's been posted on the World Wide Web by NASA, just with the normal 100% resolution, it would span 77 by 144 inches. So, for example, the ridge in the middle distance in the left middle quadrant of the photograph, which is Tsiolkovsky Ridge, which was named for a Russian rocketry pioneer, NASA states on its website, is about 100 feet in width. And so we're really talking about a massive area here. So what I began to do is I began to study the photograph at very small degrees of resolution because I realized it was a very large area that the Spirit had photographed as it was perched on the western edge of the Home Plate Plateau in the inner basin of the Columbia Hills Range of Mars in the Gusev Crater in November of 2007. And what I found is that over on the far right side of the photograph was an outcropping of rocks in which several humanoid beings in bluish-gray bodysuits could be seen sitting in the rock cluster. Now, this rock outcropping that I'm calling the rock garden is a very significant detail of the photograph, and it embodies essentially the first typology of humanoid being that I've discovered on Mars. It's very easy to find in the photograph. If you look at the far right side of the photograph, at a very small degree of resolution where you can see the whole photograph on your screen, there is a natural pathway apparently carved by the channelization of water at one time on Mars that is in the shape of a capital Y. And if you go up to the right prong of that Y and immediately over to the right on the photograph, you'll see a little smudge that resembles sort of a human eyebrow. And if you use your enlargement capability in your imaging software and enlarge that little smudge of rocks, of small rocks, to the immediate right of the right prong of that Y, you'll see that there's an outcropping of rocks, and at the back of this outcropping there is a large, grotesque humanoid skull. I mean, it's a dramatic scene. It looks like an inhabited Paleolithic site that would have been fabricated by Hollywood set designers. The humanoid skull is not of a Homo sapiens. It is either a fossil or a sculpture of a humanoid being with a wider head than a human being, a more prominent nose, and large elephantine ears. And the hands of this structure, or this statue or fossil, can be seen reaching up from the soil of Mars as if it would be trying to grab somebody and bring them down within the underground of Mars. I think it's probably another statue, but it's a very disturbing image. It's certainly a more unusual form of statuary than human beings on Earth would design for a civic area. Now, in that outcropping, again, that I'm calling the rock garden, I'm trying to give all of the anomalies in this particular image names that are descriptive, but that would also be simple enough for school children to understand what I'm describing. There are several humanoids sitting in the rock garden. One is on the immediate left, at the rock garden. One is on the immediate left, and he's sitting with his legs akimbo like we would be if we were sitting on the grass playing a guitar. And we can see his right shoulder, and he's slightly hunched over, holding, perhaps he's eating or holding a musical instrument or holding a child, but he's sitting there on the soil on the left side of the rock garden. Next to him, closer to the grotesque skull, is a more female humanoid form who's sitting in a demure fashion with her legs back to her right. She's leaning slightly forward towards the center of the rock garden, and she has multiple appendages. She either has four arms or six, and she also is holding something that looks more like a technical instrument or perhaps a musical instrument that she's holding up to her lips. Then at the center of the rock garden, in the right hand of the grotesque humanoid form, is another small humanoid who's sitting as if he's literally in the hand of the humanoid. And then over on the right side of the rock garden, there's a large sort of bulbous formed figure apparently throwing something in the position we would be, for example, if we were playing catch, perhaps throwing a baseball with our right hand. He's looking over to the left side of the rock garden at the other humanoids as he's throwing something, apparently. And then there's a pregnant humanoid sitting on the ground with resting on her hands, looking towards the center of the image. She's observing an infant, a small infant, about 10 feet in front of her, if in fact she was as large as an adult female human. So when I made this discovery on December 7th of 2008, I realized that we've really crossed a threshold in our understanding of the nature of our solar system and the universe, and that is that our space agency, NASA, has captured photographs of apparently ancient artifacts and of living humanoid beings on another planet in our solar system, and in fact, on the planet Mars, which every 2 years is the planet that comes closest to Earth. And so during the month of December of 2008, I became very engrossed in the image. I worked essentially around the clock, sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night. And at this point, I've gathered numerous images. I would say, at least 100 significant images of humanoid beings, different animal species that presently exist, once existed and are extinct, or have never existed on planet Earth, as well as carved statues that would have had to have been created by intelligent beings, and built structures that are arguably either architectural structures or more statues on the surface of Mars. And I'm bringing this to the attention of the world community simply because it's a breakthrough discovery in natural history. And everybody on our planet deserves to know what's up there so that they understand the natural history of our own universe, of their universe. And I was happy and privileged to make this disclosure on your website, exopolitics.com, because this discovery bespeaks a host of considerations in the area of exopolitics. I mean, now that we found that there is life on Mars and there are ancient artifacts that are there, what policies are we going to craft to interact with the presence of living beings and of ancient structures on the Red Planet? This is really uncharted territory, but before we start answering such questions, we really have to resolve what's in the image. And so the first major discovery I made was the fact that there are statues and apparently living forms of human beings very much like ourselves in this NASA image.
Right. I'm just thinking that we could go on and begin going through some of the specific types of humanoid beings and typology, and remind the listeners that they can go to www.exopolitics.com. There are 9 separate documents there in PDF. They can download a 41-page report which Mr. Bisciago has drafted, which contain photographs of each of these findings together with the analytic text. And I'd just like to make a note here that the news of this discovery is also being carried in Physics News. That is, it's in Physics News now, which is a mainstream scientific journal. You've also written to the National Geographic Society. Could you tell us a bit about why you've done that?
Well, on December 12th, when I published my paper, I asked myself, what would be the most appropriate institution to receive this information? And in light of the fact that the National Geographic Society for over 100 years has essentially been the leading organization in the world to articulate and study and illustrate both biological life forms and human civilization on Earth, I thought they would be the most appropriate institution to approach with the abundant evidence I have of both living species and ancient artifacts on the Red Planet. So on December 12th, I wrote a letter to the president of the National Geographic Society, John Fahey, asking him to review my evidence for consideration for publication in the National Geographic. I sent him a 4-page letter that you've graciously posted on exopolitics.com. Listeners can visit your website and read that 4-page letter. And I sent him a CD-ROM with my papers so that their photo analyst could grapple with the abundant photographic evidence that I've accumulated from the original NASA photograph. That paper and letter, unfortunately, were delayed by a blizzard that we had here in the Pacific Northwest and were mailed a few weeks later. So we're being patient and waiting for the National Geographic Society to come back with its response. But having been a reader of the National Geographic from the time I was a small child, I thought, well, what would be an institution in our civilization here on Earth that could handle this material in the most responsible and professional way and analyze and process the images in the most highly evolved way and present it to an international readership? And so I reached out to the National Geographic Society, hoping that I could consult with them and show them what I found, and collaborate on a special edition of the National Geographic magazine, because this is a breakthrough discovery. This is literally the story of the millennium. You know, I found myself subjectively kind of being in the role that the Jodie Foster character plays in Contact. This is Contact. We are now in contact with evidence of biological life forms and ancient artifacts on another planet in the cosmos. I think that's a story that the National Geographic should and will be interested in, and I'm confident in the fullness of time that they will be publishing this material.
Well, now, you're a trial lawyer by background and by profession, and so you were citing what they call in the law the best evidence rule. And I'm just wondering, as we go along here, I was struck by one of the more recent additions there. You say one of the humanoid beings on Mars who is he says, the humanoid being is wearing tan pants and is bare-chested and can be seen leaning against the rock wall at the back of the rock enclosure. Would you consider this particular photograph, which is available at exopolitics.com, would you consider this to be an example of the best evidence rule?
Yes, indeed I would, Alfred. Let me explain the best evidence rule. In the law, the best evidence rule is that when one makes an assertion in court based on evidence, one has to proffer the best evidence of that rule. For example, if one is constructing an argument regarding a contract, the original copy of that contract has to be entered into evidence because it constitutes the best evidence of what that legally defensible agreement is. In the case of NASA photograph PIA-10214, the best evidence that I've been able to proffer in defense of my assertion that this is a landmark photograph, literally constituting a major breakthrough in human understanding of our solar system and the universe, is a humanoid being that can be seen standing on a cluster of rocks that I'm calling the rock enclosure on Tsiolkovsky Ridge. Now, let me describe what this is and where listeners can find it in the image. If one examines the overall image, one can see the front edge of this of the rover Spirit at the bottom of the image, because the Spirit has photographed beyond itself across the plateau and into the valley bottom there, and you can see Tsiolkovsky Ridge, which is in the middle distance, sort of beyond the valley bottom. You have a ridge that, again, NASA estimates is about 100 feet across. Okay. The humanoid being in the rock enclosure is very easy to find. If you can't see the humanoid being in the rocks I'm describing, then that's a good test that the visual chip in your computer is not strong enough to pick up the image of the humanoid being or distinguish it from the soil. But one can quickly find the rock enclosure and then seek out better hardware to see the humanoid being that's standing inside of it. Let me describe for listeners how this being can be seen. If you look at the left solar array of the Spirit at the bottom of the image, you'll see that in the leftmost corner of that left solar array, there's a square object about the size and shape of a cigarette package, a box of, or, you know, standard package of cigarettes. If you then count five solar rays over on the leading edge of the Spirit, literally the edge that's facing the edge of the plateau. So you count five solar rays over. If you then go straight up the image towards Tsiolkovsky Ridge, you'll see that on the right crest line of the ridge are three or four rocks that vaguely look like pieces of chocolate cake. We're calling them the pieces of chocolate cake just to be able to identify them in the overall image. Now, if those rocks, those pieces of chocolate cake, were at the center of a clock, the rock enclosure would be at would be down the ridge at 8 o'clock. So if you find those rocks on the upper right side of the ridge and then move down towards the 8 o'clock position, you'll encounter a C-shaped or horseshoe-shaped cluster of rocks that is there on the ridge, and the open part of the C is towards us. Now, at very small degrees of resolution, it looks like there are four rocks there. Basically a sort of a fragmented or diamond-shaped rock, several flat rocks in the back, and then a kind of a clamshell-like rock on the right. But as I began to analyze this image, I found something very startling, and that is that there are only three rocks there, because the two rocks in the back, the number two and number three rock, apparently out of four, is actually one wall-shaped rock that a small humanoid being is standing against. And it is his body, in fact, that is visually breaking up those two rocks. I also found evidence of a rock carving in that same location. The rock on the right has been carved with a bas relief or an intaglio pattern that resembles the kind of images human beings have made on Earth when they've tried to personify the sun, you know, our sun, as a human being or human head. Now, this humanoid being has a long spindly body. His flesh, he's bare-chested. He's wearing a tan pair of pants. He has very, very narrow legs. But in my rendering of the image, I can even see the articulation of his legs. He's either standing in water or in the soil or kneeling, and he's leaning against the back rock wall there, apparently interacting with other humanoids that are behind this outcropping that I'm calling the rock enclosure. This detail is highly significant. This represents the first close-up image of another humanoid being that was taken by America's space agency on another planet. And as such, I believe that it deserves higher scrutiny than it's received. But in any case, that I think is the best evidence, in the sense that you can clearly see that it's a humanoid. You can see his head. You can see his upper torso from behind. In my image, I can even make out the scapulae in his upper back. He's stretching, his upper torso is stretching over the rock wall. You can see his arms extending over the back side there. And you can see that he has some sort of belt with which he has cinched up his pants. So this is really a revolutionary image. It's the first image of a humanoid being taken on another planet, indeed taken by NASA, and it's been posted on the World Wide Web for over 12 months, and it hasn't even been discussed. So there's a major finding lurking here, and I would proffer this particular detail from PIA 102 and 4 as the best evidence of life on Mars. It is either a biological life form, or it is a statue that has been constructed to resemble such, or it is a photographic inlay that has been placed in this image. But let me address those possibilities. This image is clearly of a humanoid. Now, we find it in a NASA photograph that NASA has posted on the web. At this point, I think there are only three possibilities, given that background, given that provenance of the photograph. Number one, we're looking at something that's resulted from an institutional hoax by NASA, where this image was, and these and other anomalies in the image were photoshopped in the image by NASA. I discount that probability not only because of the high esteem that I hold the space agency in, but because I don't think they would doctor one of their own images to establish the existence of extraterrestrial life on Mars. And the reason I say that is that in previous cases where evidence of ancient artifacts have been found on other celestial bodies, photographed indeed, on other celestial bodies in our solar system, including the robotic head and other mechanical debris that was photographed by astronaut Harrison Schmitt in a canyon on the moon during the Apollo 17 mission, the face on Mars at Cydonia that has attracted so much controversy over the years, and also the photographic evidence of mining equipment on Ganymede, which is one of the moons of Jupiter. When we consider the fact that when that evidence surfaced in the past, NASA remained silent about the prospect of ancient artifacts being located on other planets in our solar, or other celestial bodies in our solar system, and then only grudgingly debunked the Cydonia evidence in 1997, I have to believe that the space agency would not be involved institutionally in hoaxing evidence of ancient artifacts or evidence of biological life forms on Mars. And for that matter, politically speaking, it hasn't made any official statement of this discovery. So if it is aware of this evidence of a humanoid being and other details that reveal humanoid beings in this photograph, it certainly hasn't made any official scientific or policy statement to that effect. The second possibility is that this image and the other details are spurious, that they have been photoshopped into the overall image by, for example, one or several people inside of NASA doing so as a hoax for whatever motive. Now, if that's the case, this is an important regulatory issue going to the matter of quality control over the photographs, because these are the official and definitive photographs of what exists on the surface of Mars that NASA has posted on the World Wide Web to inform the world community of what it is discovering on the surface of the Red Planet. So if in fact we find that these are photoshopped images, I think I've still uncovered an important story in the sense that there are issues here regarding the quality control of the photographs that NASA is posting. Now, if we assume arguendo that NASA has not hoaxed this photograph intentionally as an institutional policy for whatever purpose, and that there has been no breach of the integrity of the issue by a hoaxer working for NASA, in my view, that leaves only one other possibility, and that is that this and the other elements of indicating extraterrestrial life on Mars would suggest that this is the most significant photograph ever taken in the history of photography on Earth. And that's why I'm so excited about it. That's why I believe these findings are so important. And that's why I'm working so hard to bring this evidence to the attention of the world community. But yes, I would say that this humanoid being in the rock enclosure in the top middle area of Silkovsky Ridge is not just the best evidence, but it's highly significant evidence because it constitutes the first photographic evidence provided by our space agency of a humanoid being on another planet in our solar system.
Right. You know, and as you're speaking, I want to point out to the listeners that I'm actually looking at an isolated cropped photograph of that humanoid figure in that kind of rock, leaning over that rock formation, and that isolated photograph, if they want to go directly to it, they can do it at www.exopolitics.com. There's a two-page PDF document there that's entitled Mars Publishes Detail of One of the Humanoid Beings on Mars Photographed by NASA's Exploration Rover Spirit. So that there are many instances where you can go into the individual reports and get access to one of the 100 or so photographs that Mr. Bashago has been speaking about, where he's gone in and actually extracted portions of the photograph. You know, that just brings up a small technical issue, which I'd like to raise here, and that is because I know that there are variations amongst computer systems, and I wondered if you could just give a brief description of what methodology you use to go to each sector of the photograph and isolate each of these significant beings and humanoids and other figures, and what sort of equipment you are using.
Certainly, and I think the technical issue is a critical one. I think we're going to find as laptop imaging quality improves, my claims are going to be more readily verified. But I have evaluated what I've seen on my laptop by downloading the original NASA image to the systems of friends and colleagues, and we've also used their hardware to evaluate additional copies of the original NASA full-resolution JPEG on the NASA website. The methodology that I used to isolate small portions of this image was to first import the full-resolution JPEG of PIA 10214 into the paint program of my Windows Vista operating system on my HP Pavilion Entertainment PC. This was a laptop purchased that was manufactured in 2006 and sold to me in 2008 that has a state-of-the-art visual chip with which one can view high-resolution images of feature films on one screen. So it's an advanced computer chip that's giving me very high-fidelity images on my screen. I opened the entire image in Paint, and then I used the cutting tool in Paint to cut small portions of the image out around particular details that I wanted to study. I then imported or did a copy-paste function and dropped those excerpts from the original photograph into an MS Word 2000 document because I found that I was getting better color resolution and better resolution of form doing that than trying to work with the image in Photoshop. I also wanted to avoid a later allegation that I had Photoshopped the images. In other words, I didn't want to do any manipulation of the image that such as is available in so many ways with the Photoshop program. So I simply dropped the images into an MS Word 2000 document, and without distorting the borders of the image, I went into the resizing option and would increase the image by 1 to 2 to 500% so that the relative proportions of what was viewed in the original image remained intact. I did a little bit of adjustment of the borders when I imported the photographs then into my my academic paper, The Discovery of Life on Mars. But when I was initially studying the images so I could gather evidence for the case that I was building, which I think is a strong case, I simply used the paint program to drop them into Word and then enlarge them in Word. Now, when I do that, on this entertainment PC that was manufactured by Hewlett-Packard, the images that result are high-resolution images of the things that I've discovered on Mars. The point that I'm distinguishing there is that, unlike the controversy surrounding the face on Mars at Cydonia, the quality of the images that I've rendered go far beyond a colorable claim that what we're dealing with is a trick of light and shadow, or pareidolia, the human tendency to see human faces and forms in random objects like clouds. Rather, I have developed evidence in these images that would be of the quality, let's say, that one would gather if one was using a telephoto lens to photograph human beings that were, let's say, at a distance of 300 to 500 feet. If, for example, we were standing on a hill and we were photographing people down on a beach, and let's say somebody was wearing a baseball cap, the quality of the images I've recovered would be sharp enough to be able to determine that the person was wearing a baseball cap, but maybe not clear enough to determine what baseball team logo was on their cap. So they're fairly high-resolution images with a little bit of blurriness. They're certainly not the over-pixelized versions that some people are getting on their laptops because they have outmoded visual chips in their systems. I'm getting images that are of high enough quality to publish on the pages of the National Geographic. And for some reason, I would commend Hewlett-Packard for this, I'm getting no pixelation of these very tiny images when I enlarge them to a very large size. So I think that we're dealing here with a technical advance that may go to why I was successful in recovering evidence of this quality.
Right. You know, Andy, I'd just like to jump in here with a station ID. This is CFRO 102.7 FM, www.coopradio.org, live on the Internet. This is the Monday Brown Bagger. I'm Alfred Weber. You're listening to lawyer and environmental scholar Andrew D. Bashago as he is describing various aspects of his photographic discovery of life on Mars. You know, this program is so exciting that we have now gone to the point where we only have a little under 15 minutes left, and we barely have started what set out to be an outline. So I can see that we're going to have you back again, but I just wondered, just in the interest of, we've sort of gone to the best evidence. You described four typologies of humanoids, and I wondered if you could start out with the first, typology.
Yeah, the first typology is the one that I've just discussed. Basically, humanoid beings that resemble human beings on Earth, but that have more bulbous heads and apparently slightly more elongated bodies. They look very similar to the humanoids that have appeared so frequently in the UFO contact literature, the contact of alien abduction and human-alien contact. And I think what's interesting about these images is that some have multiple appendages, which I don't think has appeared that frequently in the UFO literature. The second typology
Could you repeat that again? When you say some have multiple appendages, could you kind of, what exactly does that look like? What do you mean by that?
Well, it looks like, the humanoid beings that have appeared in the alien contact literature have essentially had basic human form with two arms and two legs. Some of the humanoid beings of the first typology that have been that I've identified in this photograph resemble such beings, but others have, above the waist, have four to six arms, like in a more of a centipedal kind of body type.
So are they humanoid, or are they humanoid insect hybrid, or?
Well, the humanoid insect hybrids are actually the third typology, so we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves there.
Okay.
But my point there is, for example, with the humanoid beings in blue bodysuits, or that bluish-gray bodysuits, they're sitting over in the rock garden. They clearly look like they're members of the same species, and some of them have two arms and two legs like us, and several of them, the ones, in fact, that look female, have multiple appendages. So, I would say that that's probative that this particular race may not be mammalian, but may be some form of human-insect hybrid. Alfred, if I might go on to the second typology, just so we're clear about the various life forms that, or human
right,
life forms.
Right, right. But just so that it's clear that why you would have written to the National Geographic Society with this finding, because as I understand it, their Committee on Research and Exploration, which is quite large, covers at least 15 or 16 different sciences, ranging from botany to zoology to biology. So you would have to have, addressing these new species is going to be quite a task.
Right. In fact, that's one of the reasons that I reached out to the National Geographic Society, is they do have the staff to really, in so many areas of science, to really explore these new life forms. I mean, we're looking at unprecedented evidence of biological creatures that apparently evolved on another planet, or it certainly didn't evolve on Earth. And we're going to have to classify them in biology, or at least in exobiology, the emerging field of biological life forms on other planets. And I'm hoping that I can consult with them and show them those particular differences, so that we can begin to grapple with really what types of life forms we're looking at.
Right.
Now, the second typology is more difficult to see in the images. They tend to be transparent, and they resemble, it's very hard to describe, but I'll try. They're fairly transparent. They resemble Native American totem poles, in the sense that we found them standing either next to humanoids or perched on rocks. They have multiple appendages that reach out from a common body, but curiously, the appendages are different lengths. So there's an asymmetrical design to their appendages. And many have large heads and sort of are smiling and so forth. And we think that these are either biological life forms that are literally looking up at the rover and smiling, or they're statues that have either just been placed there for millennia or even recently, that are just very fancy glass statues of almost cartoonish humanoid forms. At this point, we don't know. I don't think we're going to know until we either get better photo resolution of the original image, or we send astronauts to the surface of Mars, which opens up a whole another host of issues. But the second typology are these transparent beings. One thing that we found that's kind of interesting thus far is they tend to be apparently standing around either directing things or observing things. Like one of them is standing next to a humanoid that seems to either be digging a hole or entering or exit a tunnel opening. And so these large transparent glass totems, as I'm calling them, constitute the second typology, and we're still trying to determine whether they are statues or life forms.
Right.
Now, the third typology are the human insect hybrids. Without question, the human insect hybrids that you mentioned. If one looks at the overall photograph and finds the right upper quadrant of the photograph, one sees a hillside that is littered with turquoise rocks, what appear to be turquoise rocks. We're calling this the turquoise field, not only because there apparently are turquoise rocks there, but because there's a scattering of turquoise color over that quadrant of the image. If one enlarges the hill there with the turquoise forms on it, one sees a very clear image of a humanoid that has a bald head like a man, the upper torso of a male human being, but the lower extremities of a scorpion. His body going from where the top of his tunic of a bodysuit would begin all the way through his scorpion-like body is camouflage to blend in with the turquoise rocks that are present there at the turquoise field in the inner basin of the Columbia Hills Range. And for me, this is almost the iconic image of the find, because this image is very clear. It's very startling because it's a human-insect hybrid or a human-arachnid hybrid. And it's very fanciful, so it really belies the whole issue of whether or not somebody has hoaxed this or whether this is an actual creature on the surface of Mars. But I publish it at the bottom of page 8 of my paper, and I was absolutely astounded when I found it. I mean, it was literally an apparent life form on the surface of Mars that resembles a bald male human and a scorpion. And so we're calling that particular life form the Scorpion Man.
Right. What are your thoughts? Could you tell us what you felt as you as a mammalian human, as you began discovering the first typology of humans, and then the multiple appendages, and then getting into the more exotic, like the scorpion human, the half scorpion, half human.
The primary emotion was one of excitement. I was startled by what I found. I wasn't frightened by it. I realized it in all likelihood it represented life on another planet, and hence I knew immediately that it represented a significant discovery. I think one of the things that characterizes my response is that I became so engrossed in what I was finding and so excited by it that it produced almost a natural adrenaline, and I found myself sleeping 3-4 hours a night as I began to just pore over the images. In this case, the image is so well resolved, and it would be so difficult to first create this type of image by either modeling it physically or painting it, and then dropping it into that area of the hill there on the turquoise field, where you can see the shadow underneath the creature and so forth. You can see a smaller creature in front of him. That I was just intensely fascinated, and I realized that if this was a valid image that the space agency had provided on its website, then I was on the threshold of a major discovery. I was thinking that, in a sense, I must have felt as excited as Charles Darwin did when he studied the animals on the Galapagos Island and saw the natural selection that had occurred among them, except that my Galapagos Islands were on the Internet and my animals were on the surface of Mars. So it was a very exciting moment. I knew that it probably represented a breakthrough, and I was just utterly fascinated at looking for the first time at another biological life form on another planet.
Right, and here we have, as you stated, that Mars, during certain periods of the year, is the closest planet to Earth, and yet look at the differences in life forms. It seems as though some event occurred, some intervening event that would have that there's such a disparity amongst the different type of human beings, of humanoid beings, that perhaps we're getting too far ahead of ourselves. But each of these findings raises so many unanswered questions that I can see that this is a veritable treasure load. Or it is an other world.
Right. I described it in my press release as a cosmic treasure trove of evidence of biological life forms and animal species and carved statues and built structures on Mars. I'm a lawyer. I'm not an evolutionary biologist, and so I won't offer an informed opinion regarding the patterns of speciation that exist on Mars. But one thing that I think even somebody who can offer a lay opinion can see is that what's fascinating about the Scorpion Man is that it suggests that the evolution of life on Mars, which is our neighboring planet every 2 years, our next closest planet to Earth, is both similar to, or was both similar to and has diverged from patterns of the evolution of life forms on our planet. I mean, here we have an anthropomorphic being, a being that seems to possess the cranium and the upper body of a modern human being with the lower body of an arachnid, of a scorpion.
You know, I'm going to have to jump in there at that point and just say this has been extraordinary. We are definitely going to have to ask you back because we just scratched the surface of this find, and we certainly want to thank you for being here. We've been with lawyer and environmental scholar and now discoverer Andrew D. Bishago on the discovery of life on Mars. To learn more, please go to exopolitics.com, or you can go to this week's issue of Physics News. You can Google that online. This is Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, www.coopradio.org. This is the Monday Brown Bagger. I'm Alfred Weber. May you have a wonderful and miracle-filled day. Thank you.